The piebald deer has patches of white on it. Harvestmen and crane flies. The harvestmen are the daddy long legs. They are not spiders. Crane flies, they look like giant mosquitoes, but they have no biting mouth parts. High bush cranberries, they are easy to find. They're bright red. I was surprised to hear that the leaves are still on them. Canada thistle and blue violet still blooming. I found chickweed still in bloom. Silver maple leaves have dropped. The buds really do look quite large and can be, I don't know, deceiving this time of year. You see these bright, large red buds and you think, oh, what's going on here? But it's just the silver maple getting ready for next year. Support for this program comes from Timberlake Restaurant, offering fresh baked popovers, crafted cocktails, and menu items such as walleye a la Ritz or chicken Kiev. Information about the dinner menu is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
And thanks to Happy Dancing Turtle, they're a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education programs and experiences. More information at HappyDancingTurtle.org.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word DONATE to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
It is Member Appreciation Week all this week, thanking you for making KAXE possible. We heard from the community that this matters because we all feel more connected. We know more about where we live. We learn about nature, great music. And we had a confidential match on the table this morning. We needed 5 people to donate, and we'd get an extra $100,000 unlocked from the generous confidential pledger. Again, this is not a normal fundraiser, but one of our members said, you know what, I really believe in Tuesday mornings. I want to get a little extra for you guys. So we've heard from 4 people so far. One more unlocks that $1,000. You can do your part. Text the word DONATE to 218-326-1234. It makes these kind of conversations possible. Allison just did it from Bacchus. She said Tuesdays are her favorite day. She loves to listen in. And we can't wait to hear more from you. We'll have weather coming up too, but we do have one report left.
Yes, we do. And we will finish up with this report from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield.
Hi, this is Hugo.
And this is Theo.
And we're from Prairie Creek Community School, way down in the south of Northfield, Minnesota.
Breaking news this past Friday, the ginkgo trees in town all lost their leaves at the same time.
We had a peak color this weekend that is much later than the early October average we found in the data from the 1980s.
We didn't see any monarchs this week.
We did see one dragonfly, worm-casting sandhill crane, and even a heron.
The bird count is drifting down. We just got 17 species this morning, compared to 32 weeks ago.
We saw many pheasants, eagles, and starlings.
We saw a lot of deer and raccoons.
This has been Prairie Creek.
One more step along the phenology journey.
Thanks, Hugo and Theo. Nice report. Great to hear from you guys. The ginkgo trees. We don't have ginkgo up here, but the ginkgo has a really unusual leaf. If you are in the cities and you see one of these trees, look at the leaves. They are singular and easy to identify once you put that pattern in your head. A peak of color over the weekend. I would agree the Twin Cities was just spectacular. Lovely maples, bright red, and big oaks just covered in bronze leaves. It was quite the place to be over the weekend. Although I did notice that the walnut and the butternut had dropped their leaves already. And it must be just, they just must be a little bit earlier. Dragonflies, sandhill cranes, a heron. Bird count is down. 17 species. And just 2 weeks ago, they had 30. And so deer and raccoons, pheasants, eagles, starlings. their peak color, much later than the early October average we found from data in the 1980s. And that sort of goes along with what I'm seeing up here. There has been this shift to later falls as a result of probably global warming. So interesting that they would have data going back to the 80s, just like me, and they're able to access that data and compare it to what they're doing today, which is what phenology is all about. Thank you to the students who are out there and doing their hard work. And as always, these reports will be available online if you want to access one from your area. They will be available probably later tomorrow. And you can check out individual reports in their full length.
Coming up, we'll have the big weather picture with Tornado Bob. We've already got a couple of questions out there. People always wanting to know about winter, and there's not any great answers at the moment to know what this winter is going to be like. We've had some, Bob talked about it last week, and then we've heard some differing opinions. And so we'll talk a little bit more about the change in seasons. I think, is this weekend daylight saving?
Sunday, yep.
Okay.
We're
definitely
November 2nd.
Things are changing, that's for sure. And we bring you the latest. I loved how the Northfield kids said breaking news.
Yeah.
About the ginkgo leaves. So this is what you hear. Sometimes what's right outside our window, we have to tell you immediately because it is breaking news about a bird that we saw or something blooming or the color of the sunrise in the morning. That's what you get when you tune into KEXE. Real people, we're not robots as far as I know. We're not AI.
I keep checking the box. It says I'm not a robot. But I do it so assiduously that perhaps I am and I don't know it.
You're not. I'm here to say John Latimer is not a robot. And we're celebrating members all this week. Thank you so much to everybody we've heard from so far. Your membership makes this kind of programming possible where you feel connected, where you take a moment to just look at nature. I mean, you can't beat what that is. Essentially, we're saying there's some meditation going on. There's some curiosity going on. And that's what we bring you each and every week. And new to phenology and the nature reporting we do is a brand new podcast, the Season Watch podcast. That's something that you haven't caught yet. You can find it at KEXE.org or on the weekends or on the podcast platforms you already use. No doubt. So thank you so much. One more unlocks $1,000 from a confidential pledger. It is membership week, but we are taking this time to thank our members. And we thank that member who wanted to make sure we raised a little extra money on a Tuesday morning. We can't thank you enough.
We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org. And we receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
We connect you to the events in our local communities. That's what you've also come to rely on. Coming up on Halloween Friday night, the Marcel Family Center has a Halloween bash. It's from 5 to 7:30. You can enjoy food, games, candy, and more. Children must be with an adult. And the Grand Rapids Chamber of Commerce has a trick-or-treat event at the Emeralds Nursing Home on Halloween from 4 to 6. And you can still be part of the Screamatorium in downtown Virginia at Chair from 6 to 10 each evening, October 29th. So that's tomorrow through Saturday night, November 1st. Those in elementary school must be accompanied by an adult. A tamer version will be offered to younger kids on Halloween from 4 to 6 o'clock.
Think I could pass as a younger kid?
No. Me either. I mean,
probably
but that's
not
the one that I would only be able to handle.
Exactly.
So I agree.
Right.
The Itasca Curling Association in Grand Rapids offers lessons, youth programming, league play, and more. You can find more information about upcoming events at itascacurling.com.
Support comes from the Loft Event Center in downtown Bemidji, providing a multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Event Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com.
Coming up, we'll be talking weather with Tornado Bob. You can send in questions to 218-326-1234. Just text that number. You can also join us after 8:35 or so. If you aren't able to make it to our open houses at KEXE Studios at 9 or in Bemidji at KBXE, you can kind of join us on the air. Maybe you've always wanted to ask John Latimer something that you might have if you'd shared a donut with him. I don't know if he'd share his donut, to be honest with you. But you can join us. We're going to open up our phone lines at about 8:40 this morning, or our text line, 218-326-1234.
If there's a donut in the box with little shreds of coconut on top,
yeah,
we'll share that one.
Oh, okay. How about the ones with the little jimmies, little candy on top, colorful?
You know, I'm not big on jimmies, but yeah. You know, if they're there, I mean, if there's enough chocolate frosting under them, I will eat them.
I love like a cake donut that's almost a little crispy on the edges.
Yes.
There you go. We've got donuts, and we are here to thank you. This is Member Appreciation Week. This is called Rivers Run Red. It's by the New Eves, brand new into KEXE and KBXE. Thanks so much for tuning in. We did just hear from someone. Paul wanted to donate a little extra to help KEXE get the match. Confidential pledger put a match of $1,000 on the table. We heard from 5 people this morning. It is member appreciation. Paul, we sure appreciate you. Paul Martinetto, we really appreciate you doing that this morning and helping us reach that goal, which we just did. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Thanks to all the members. 218-326-1234. That's the number to text. And Lisa wanted to let you know, John, that she would make the sacrifice and eat the coconut-covered donut in your stead.
Thank you, Lisa. I hate to see them sit there and languish.
Yeah.
You know, they get stale after about a month, and then I have to give them to the dog.
You don't see many powdered donuts anymore.
I know. Powdered sugar donuts.
Do you? Those are my least favorite. Those boxes, my dad used to love those egg fluff donuts.
We call them.
Chocolate, kind of a nutty one, and then the powdered sugar.
Mm.
Those were always left, the whole roll. Just too messy. We're going to have donuts. We're inviting you into the studios.
I'm not eating a donut if you're going to be able to tell that I ate a donut.
Yeah, it's all over. At 9 o'clock, join us for open houses for Member Appreciation Week. But now it's time to check in with Tornado Bob. He is on the road and joining us for the big weather picture. Hey, Bob, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Morning, John.
Say, I hate to start off the morning by inciting controversy, but I was at a soup party the other night. Everybody brought a different type of soup, and I tried all seven different styles, and I had some great soups. But while I was there, someone mentioned in conversation that they had been apprised by, and they didn't list the group that gave them this information, but that winter was going to be, in contrast to your statement last week, they said colder and more snow. And last week, Bob, our trusted weather advisor, said not more snow and not more cold. So I'm just wondering, Bob, if there's a dissension in the ranks. What's going on?
I don't know who it was with the source.
Who that Yahoo was.
Could be the Farmer's Almanac.
That's it.
Yeah, the Farmer's Almanac has never, I don't think to my knowledge, ever forecast a milder than average winter.
I don't think they changed.
They always go on the colder and snowier side.
You know, except for the typesetting, I don't think that they've changed that winter prediction in 50 years or 75. They just run the same one, and every once in a while they change the type and hope that people will think it's different.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, any further evidence to indicate that you might be right, and this other Yahoo that I was speaking with, this crazy lunatic at a soup party, was wrong?
We have a La Nina still. It's actually weakening quite a bit. Although the neutral pattern of ENSO is still can be relatively snowy. I mean, it's. I think a net-net relationship isn't the deterministic sort of wave as effect that that we often claim it is. With a weak La Nina still and there's just more of a persistence of the pattern that we see. It's been just dry and it's been mild, but a lot of these types of winters with La Nina do start out relatively mild. So you can be lulled into a false sense of like complacency, I guess. And then it changes over at some point. So it's possible that later on it'll transition to something a little colder. But certainly to start, it's likely to be on the mild side. Over the short term, the pattern doesn't look super mild. I can tell you that. A lot of times in November, like this time, we're sitting like thinking like, oh my gosh, it's still really warm, and we're looking at forecasts in the 70s. You know, we've had that some Novembers, and then before it finally switches. But this year it looks like rather. The next couple weeks look maybe a bit typical for November. There's going to be a bit of changeability, and. It depends on the model. You have I always talk about the European versus the American models. The American model is showing within the next 10 days or so, we could conceivably even get snow. But the European model doesn't show as much of that. It shows kind of a more of a rain type of situation. But I think the pattern we've been in is going to revert to a more, maybe a little bit more normal pattern. We've been awfully ridged, which means weather systems can come through, but they kind of halt and dissipate, and then they don't march across our region like a lot of them do. So for today's system is an example. So I'm looking at radar before I left, before I was on the phone here, and I take it that it's probably raining a little bit in Grand Rapids.
Oh, maybe just a tiny bit. It was hardly, my intermittent windshield wipers were able to keep up with it this morning at 5:30. Right now, I don't see it, but I'm not outdoors either. I'm just looking through the window.
So it's not very, heavy rain anyway.
Yeah.
So if you go east of Grand Rapids at all, there's no rain. If you go west, then there is rain. So it's kind of the pattern we've been in. A lot of these systems come through. They get, they dump some rain in the eastern Dakotas, maybe in the northwestern Minnesota. And then as you go east, it's drier. They stall out, and this one's doing the same thing. It gets to the ridge and it just sort of stalls. And then it gets almost like pulled apart. So the part of it goes to the south, and then, most of it goes to the south, and then it kind of dissipates, on the north side. So, I'm in St. Paul now, and, the sun just came up for a little bit, and I could look to the west and see that same band of rain that's over Grand Rapids is, kind of an east band, north-south band across all of Minnesota. And it's just west of Minneapolis now. It looks dark over that way. But, this is that system. It's just kind of stalled out, in this pattern we've had all fall. And if you go east, the likelihood of rain diminishes.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about it being fairly dry. I was looking yesterday at my rain accumulations, and for this month, I think I didn't look this morning, but I think it was 68 hundredths of an inch that I've collected so far for the month of October, which is 2 inches or an inch and a half below average.
Yeah. So, hydrologically, and this is a pretty good time of year for recharging soil moisture, because of the shortening days and cooler weather and high humidity, a lot of that rain gets, it soaks into the ground. And, so this is a good time of year for recharging aquifers and stuff like that, but, that's not happening this year. It's just been a kind of dry fall. And last year we had a really dry fall as well. Now as we get into November, it looks like a little bit less dry of a pattern, but it's also, a pattern where our rainfall and snowfall, like our total precipitation amounts per month are dropping fast now. So I think November's probably got the fastest drop of relative to the, previous months of any month of the year.
Right. I'm looking at almost 10 inches under our yearly average. If our yearly average is 28, it's 18 something right now for the entire year. So I'm well short of what would be the full 28 inches for the year. So we are definitely still not getting the moisture that we could use.
Yep. Pretty much the case. As you go across, from Grand Rapids, the worst drought is in, so a little south of Grand Rapids, from Grand Rapids, basically down to Brainerd and over east to Duluth that's kind of the areas that are hitting the hardest right now.
Mm-hmm. Say, I don't want to divert you too far afield, but what can you tell us about this hurricane that is tromping around Jamaica right now? I heard last week someone told me that it was stalled. It was moving at 1 or 2 miles an hour. How do you stall a hurricane?
Normally the flow in the tropics is really light. So the hurricane is, if it's stalled out, it's still spinning. The spin of the hurricane is like you still have a 175 mile per hour hurricane
just not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. So if you're in that spot that's 175 miles per hour, you're in bad shape for a while.
Yeah. Wow.
Note that the area though that's getting those maximum winds is pretty small. So even with a slowly moving hurricane, your 175 time of 175 mile per hour winds is actually not that long. Well, maybe a couple hours, but so the hurricane, its movement is affected by the steering currents a lot, and in the tropics they tend to be quite a bit lighter, and they can be pushed westward if there's a ridge to the north of them, and then sometimes there's a weakness in the flow, or that just the steering pattern isn't, or the steering flow isn't very strong. Its westward motion might stop. They kind of move from east to west where they're down in the tropics, and at some point they get picked up by a trough. And that's supposed to happen fairly soon now as it makes a northward turn towards Jamaica. But this has been really slow. It's been off the coast, south of Jamaica for at least several days, really.
Yeah.
I'm almost surprised that at some point, if they sit in our area too long, they start drawing up cooler water from from deeper in the ocean. So there's upwelling around the hurricane, and that'll bring up cooler water, and that can have a weakening effect on the hurricanes. You just don't, they're driven by warm waters, and that's their source of energy. And if the water's cool, then they weaken, but sometimes if you see, look at a sea surface temperature analysis, and then after a hurricane has passed, and you'll see some cooler waters in its wake. They cause some upwelling, and then they just basically, their mechanism, their purpose is to transport heat from the ocean surface up to the top of the atmosphere, or it gets radiated away. So it's kind of what. So yeah, hurricane will have a kind of a cooling effect on the ocean surface for that reason.
I suppose, yeah. You can only, you can only pull so much heat out before there's not any more heat of that level anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. So one more question that some folks asked over the wire. What about winds? Are we having stronger winds, more wind? Is it windier than it has been? I know that I was gone over the weekend. It blew a little bit down in the cities, but boy, it stripped the leaves up here. I mean, my aspens when I left on Thursday were looking pretty good, and when I got back on Sunday, they were bare.
I'll give you one observation of mine. Last week when I was in town, the coldest morning we had, I think it was like 23 at my house. I just looked, as soon as the sun hit the trees, warmed back up above freezing, those leaves just dropped. They just dropped straight down from the tree.
Yeah.
So a lot of this happening when the winds is just actually calm. Those mornings when it gets really cold and freezes things, when they thaw again, the sun hits the tree, you see just this rain of leaves coming down.
Yeah.
So that's when a lot of them fell. It was a little breezy over the weekend too. We had south winds, southeast winds, southwest winds. And, it was like probably the same. If you were farther south in Minnesota, it was probably the same up in Grand Rapids as you had farther south.
Yeah. Well, I wondered just because they had gone bare so quickly, and my experience is the same as yours, that after a hard freeze like that, that something in that connective tissue between the leaf and the branch is severed, and you're right, they just fall. They don't. It's not the wind ripping them off the tree. It's just the
something happens in that abscission layer and down they come.
Yeah. Yep.
Pretty spectacular. Bare trees, although right here along the river, there's a black birch here, a river birch that still has leaves. There's a, I can't tell what that one is. It might be an aspen of one sort or another. Yeah. A few things got some leaves, but by and large, good time to be grouse hunting if you want to actually see the birds that you're shooting at.
Right. And I do remember, kind of brings me like an interesting, I don't know if it's an anecdotal thing, but I remember when I was basically in grade school here in the Twin Cities. In the northern suburbs of the Twin Cities, I remember it seemed to be around now, or maybe a little bit, right around the 22nd of October, that most of the leaves down in this area would be down or be coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And but now it seems to be that at my house, like last weekend, we about that same date, was when a lot of the leaves are coming down in, Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's
down here. It's like this is today's the 28th or so. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's still like lots of leaves on the trees still.
Yep.
So less than half of them have fallen.
Yep. Yeah, that was my experience down there. I had several hikes. And get your car off the tracks, train. There, Bob.
Yeah.
Here comes the train. Yeah.
Don't worry. It's not moving very fast.
Oh, good.
Well, Bob, you're missing out. It's Member Appreciation Week, and today we're inviting folks in for donuts and coffee. Normally we get you coffee, but could have had a donut today. But we want to thank you. You're a volunteer, longtime member, and stop on by if you're back in town during the week.
Yeah, I'll be back later this week.
I'll hide a donut on top of that speaker that's right over your shoulder when you're in here.
No.
I'll just set one up there, and when you come in next Tuesday.
I'll find it next week when I come in. Yeah, it's probably still good.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sure. It's a donut. How bad can it get? Thank you so much, Bob. You're a big part of what makes Tuesday mornings fun for me, and I appreciate all that you do for us. Thanks again for spending the time with us. It's always fun to chat.
It's fun to come in.
All right.
Come and chat.
All right.
See you, Bob. We've been talking about that it is Member Appreciation Week, had a confidential match on the table that we met, but we also just heard from some more members. This is our normal time for a fall fundraiser, but thanks to you, we are doing a thank you all week because folks have been continuing ever since we had the emergency fundraiser where we raised over $170,000. Each day we get more and more pledges because it lit a spark under folks about, I think they imagined a future without KEXE. And folks are coming forward to make it possible into the future. And we're using those funds to get us through this year, to get us to other places, to find funding. When we can say, hey, the community was behind us, we had this funding, we're more apt to get another, grant. And that is because of you. That's what they want to know. And we are determined to go forward into the future and not let community radio go away for Northern Minnesota. So thank you so much. Longtime members, Marn and Petter from Grand Rapids.
Oh, thanks.
Who just decided today that we need to support you on Membership Appreciation Day. And we thank the other folks that have come in as well, like Bill and Paul and Allison, all of them letting us know that they want KEXE to keep on trucking. Marianne from Brooklyn.
I say this often, and I'm about to, read another one of these underwriting things, but another thing you can do, if you've given and you've given and you've given and you still continue to give, we are blessed and we thank you for that. But if you walk into a business that you hear us mention here and you tell them that you are in there doing business with them because you heard about them through us, that is absolute gold, because those people don't get that kind of response usually,
And so if you walk into a business that you maybe frequent and you hear them underwriting programming on KAXE, if you mention to them, and especially if you happen to be talking to the owner of the business, it's like they just, it just makes their day. They realize that this service reaches out and compels loyalty, and that's something that they can't get just anywhere. So,
well, and you can also, John is absolutely right. Another way to help out if you're already a member or have already donated or can't swing it at this moment is to share what you hear on KEXE. Go to our website. There is local news like what we're about to hear from the Up North Report. The new Season Watch podcast, you could share that as well. We know people have really busy lives, especially in the mornings.
Yep.
You might hear part of it, not all of it. Share that with other folks. That's another way to make sure that KEXE keeps going into the future.
We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. And we receive support from Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Breaking news coming in from Wabana. Bill says a chipmunk just ran across his deck.
Oh, Bill. All right.
Hasn't gone underground yet.
I got it. Bill, I don't know what you're doing up there to keep your chipmunks awake, but maybe you should play your music at a little lower level. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Let him do the winter nap.
Support.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. Governor Tim Walz is giving food banks a $4 million boost as the emergency food system braces for the temporary pause of SNAP benefits due to the federal government shutdown. The Minnesota Reformer reports Walz made the announcement on Monday during a visit to the Open Door Food Shelf in Eagan. SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps. Recipients will not receive their benefits in the month of November unless Congress reconvenes and passes a spending bill. That means the 440,000 Minnesotans who typically rely on SNAP for food are likely to seek help from food shelves instead. Most SNAP recipients are children, seniors, and people with disabilities. The money comes from the Department of Human Services budget. Most is from the Human Services Fund, which is intended for emergency services. The rest is from the Family First Prevention Services Act, which is meant to support at-risk children and families. Walz said members of Congress need to, quote, get back to work. But he also said that Democrats should continue to refuse to vote for a budget bill that doesn't include health care subsidies for, quote, as long as it takes. The Beltrami County Board of Commissioners has unanimously approved a plan to demolish the current jail facility once the new one is built. Administrator Tom Berry says the jail steering committee was in favor of the demolish option, given that the budget for this portion of the project is $8.5 million and the county may have future space needs.
We're not growing more land downtown. We're already somewhat constrained on the campus that we have now. We don't want to consume any more taxable land and take that off the taxable roll. And so instead, we need to be better stewards of preserving and repurposing existing land that we have.
Construction of the new jail facility is so far on time and on budget, with commissioners also virtually touring the progress during their October 21st work session. Beltrami County voters overwhelmingly supported a special sales tax to fund the construction of a new jail facility in 2023. Dollars generated from that tax would also fund the demolition of the current jail. Tearing down the existing jail and constructing a new sally port, a type of garage door that allows for secure transport of incarcerated people on the judicial center, is expected to be the least costly option at just over $6 million. A partial remodel or a complete remodel was also considered, but the price tag increases by the millions for retrofitting the nearly 40-year-old correctional facility. 13 school districts in northern Minnesota are asking voters for financial support in special elections on Tuesday, November 4th. Early absentee and early in-person voting has been underway for these districts since September 19th, with many offering additional early voting hours this weekend. Clearbrook Gonvick is one of those districts. It is returning to voters for a capital bond request to address school building needs after voters rejected one in 2023. The dollar amount is bigger, from $28 million to nearly $35 million, but the district says a revamped plan made with community stakeholders includes more spaces for classrooms and technical training. Some districts are asking for more flexible funding via operating levies. While capital bonds can only be used on structures, operating levies go into a district's general fund, which is used for things like payroll and other operating expenses. Find out more information on how to vote in special school elections with our guide at KAXE.org. Scores of Northland athletes will race in the state cross-country meet Saturday. Megan Buffington has the details.
Greenway, Nashua, Keewatin, and Wadena Deer Creek qualified both their girls' and boys' teams at section meets last week. It will be the GNK boys' 10th straight appearance and the girls' 2nd after they qualified for the first time last season. Also returning to state is last year's single-A champion Staples Motley senior Audrey Brownell. She is one of 6 section champs from northern Minnesota this season. In total, 37 individual Northland athletes and 12 teams will race at the University of Minnesota's Les Bolstad Golf Course on Saturday. Find more on the meet and the qualifiers at KAXE.org. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our Music Phonology and Morning Show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
This is our album of the week. It is by Geese. You'll be hearing more from it coming up on Headwaters at 9 o'clock. Malachi Coons will be your host. And then today at 1 o'clock, it is DJ Ironsides, our Volunteer of the Year. Tonight at 7 o'clock, it is Sarah Sarah. It's Membership Appreciation Week at KEXE. Thank you so much. You can also, our album of the week by Geese, you can find a write-up at KEXE.org.
Support for KAXE comes from Schroeder Log Home Supply, supplying wood home and cabin owners with specialty sealants, preservatives, and wood finishes. More information at their Grand Rapids store or online at loghelp.com.
You know, if people wonder, like, what happens behind the scenes here? One thing that happened today was we said, we need to talk to Andy Try. We haven't talked to him in a long time. Andy is the Bear Project leader with the Forest Wildlife Populations and Research Group at the Minnesota DNR. And Andy joins us now. Morning, Andy. Thanks for taking the email and the request already this morning.
Good morning. So rarely does it work that quickly, but happy to be here.
No kidding.
Sometimes.
Thank you.
Last minute is the thing that works.
Wow. Well, what generated this interest is for the last couple of weeks, I've gotten a number of reports of people seeing bears, and I just assumed that most self-respecting bears had long since gone to bed and were going to sleep through this winter. And then I got to wondering, does the fact that we're having warmer falls push the bears a little bit longer to feed more before they're going to sleep? What's the case? What's going on?
Well, let me give you the quintessential biologist definition, which is it depends. it depends how far north you are as to when winter hits, and it depends if you've got little ones in tow or are with cub, you might say. And so what we find is, in general, the pregnant females up in at least the Grand Rapids latitudes and farther north start to den sometime around the first week of October. I think the average date is like October 3rd for the median, so half are before and half are a little after. And then the rest of the females, the ones that had cubs last spring and are denning with what will become yearlings, those den somewhere between 10 to 15 days later on average. And then the boys and the solo females, they are out sometimes even a little later. We'll get reports of bears out and about during hunting season, munching on gut piles and that sort of thing. So, sometimes into the second week of deer season. So it's not uncommon, especially if you're farther south. If you're like in Brainerd or Sandstone or even down on the north end of the cities, those bears will be out a little bit more than our northern bears will be.
And just tell us a little bit about what they're doing prior to finding a place to den up, I think a lot of people just assume that, you know, all the bears go out and dig a den or dig a cavity that they're going to then crawl into and sleep. But that is not the case, I understand.
That's very much correct. So starting in mid-August, their body flips the switch and they have to eat like the Michael Phelps training diet, 20-some thousand calories a day just to put on enough fat for winter.
And that just, that's like a biological, like up to that point, they're just happy to go along eating whatever, 4,000 or 6,000 calories, whatever it takes to get through the day. And then starting in August, they are like compelled to go eat more.
Exactly right. Yep. It's presumably, we think day length is the main cue because it's very consistent right in the middle of August. That's also when some of the migration starts as well. So we'll have bears from Grand Rapids going up into Canada. We have bears from Grand Rapids going to Brainerd. Brainerd bears going to Lake Winnie, eating out of the dumpster at the resort there. All kinds of movement happens in the fall. And they eat as much as they can. They kind of switch to a more nocturnal feeding schedule as you get later in the year, just so they can, they have daylight's getting shorter and they need to eat a lot of calories. So they feed more into the evenings and the nighttime. And then something will happen where they either are, we don't know the exact mechanism why they do this or how they choose, but if they've migrated, they come home, generally the females. The males will often be like, I think I want a nice, quiet, solitude place to den up, and they'll often go up into the Cooch County Bog from Grand Rapids. And then as they localize, they'll either start digging their den. Bears almost never reuse their dens ever because, if you dig it out of dirt, the top's going to collapse in midsummer. And so they'll dig a new den every year. It'll be in the same general area. But if they're younger or less experienced or they just have been flooded sometimes, they'll be above ground. And so they'll be in brush piles or out in the cattails or out in the cedar and the tamarack swamps that we have, just like in a mound of sphagnum moss. And they'll stay there all winter long, wind blowing on them, It's a little warmer in a hole in mid-January. Like, it's about 10 or 15 degrees warmer than ambient temperature in that den. But if you think about when you're ice fishing out in March, when it's nice and warm and there's sunshine, it's actually warmer to be above ground than it is below. So there's either way.
Yeah, that's astonishing. I hadn't thought about that. Part of the winter, they're nice and enjoying warmer temperatures, but then come springtime, they're actually cooler. What's going to bring them out of hibernation, and when does that happen?
Sure. So we don't know the exact mechanism for this either. It's probably a combination of things, but generally, as the we get these kind of flashy melts in the springtime, usually the first couple weeks of March, at least in the last couple decades, we get a nice big flashy melt. Everybody's out in shorts in Grand Rapids because we've just been itching to be outside in some warm temperatures. And what that does is the bears often will get wet. And so they'll leave those holes and they'll make a little daybed at the base of a tree to send the cubs up if they've got little ones. And they'll stay above ground and hang around the area until the cubs are old enough to climb trees, because that's basically their only defense. That typically happens towards the end of March, early April. And then by, I would say, tax day, those bears are back in their home ranges. Their metabolism has gotten back to the levels it was, you know, last spring. And they're out and about on the prowl for your trash and your bird feeders, as well as skunk cabbage is a big favorite, grass, clover, green vegetation, that sort of thing.
I as an aside, I was out looking at a little patch of skunk cabbage that I know about, and they had been there and eaten all the flowers, and I picked up a little tiny piece of one of the flowers. This is, you know, back maybe 20 years ago when I wasn't... it was an education moment. I thought, what is it about this flower that the bears are so attracted to? And I put this tiny little chip of skunk cabbage flower in my mouth and bit it a couple times and spit it out, and became aware that the skunk cabbage is a member of the arum family and that it's nothing you should put in your mouth, which makes me wonder, how do the bears stomach it?
I haven't the slightest clue about that, John. They also love to eat Jack in the Pulpit, which is the same problem.
Yep.
They have evolved to consume, and you know, skunk cabbage, as I'm sure your listeners are well aware, is one of the only plants that's called thermogenic. It generates its own heat and melts the snow around it. It's the very first plant available in the spring for them to munch on. And they'll go for it. They'll also dig at the core of the wetland grasses where there's like an inch of white and a little tiny bit of green where there's sugars. But they have just evolved to handle it. They're omnivores. They can deal with a lot of things.
You know, that brings another question to mind. If I'm a bear and suddenly in mid-August I'm starting to need 20,000 calories a day, eating ants isn't going to cover that. That's a lot of ants. What do they eat, and where do they get those calories?
Yeah, you bet. So the bulk of their diet in May is catkins, and like they'll be climbing up aspen trees and breaking branches and eating aspen buds.
I've seen that.
Yep, and then they move to insects. They will, if they find fawns when fawns drop, so that's right around Memorial Day here in the Grand Rapids area, they'll eat fawns when they find them for a couple weeks, but it's only at max like 5% of their diet. Everything else is vegetation and ants to that point. Sometimes they'll dig out ground wasp nests, that sort of thing. And then when the berries show up around the 4th of July, star sarsaparilla is the very first one. And then you move into your raspberries and cherries and Juneberries and all the stuff that we also like to eat. But most of those kind of dry up in August. Sometimes you'll get some late fruit showing up. Red osier dogwood is a later fall food for them, as is all the dogwood species. But red osier is great because you get two flushes of berries, one in the summer and one in the fall. Yeah. And then acorns and hazelnuts are the big deal. Acorns are one of the best bellwethers where you're going to have a really successful bear population pretty much anywhere south of the boreal forest all the way down into Mexico for black bears. The acorns is the most important food on the landscape for them where they can find it.
They must have done pretty well this year. It was a pretty big acorn crop.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Andy Try. He's the bear guy. He's the bear project leader, Forest Wildlife Populations and Research Group from the Minnesota DNR. Andy, we got a text in from Mark from rural Goodland. He said, we have a small bear around 50 pounds hanging around under our oak tree eating acorns. It is by itself. Will it survive the winter by itself? Is there anything we can do?
That's a great question. So because we hunt bears in Minnesota, sometimes cubs get orphaned. similarly, sometimes yearling bears, so one-year-old, almost two-year-old bears, they're just by themselves inherently. And so the best thing you can do is just let it eat acorns, make sure that the bird seed is put away, the trash is secured, and then it'll go ahead and den and move off. Bear cubs, if they're orphaned at 5 or 6 months, so anytime after about kind of the 1st of August, are old enough to survive on their own unless they're really, really small. Like, you know, you could fit multiple in a 5-gallon pail. That's when it's time to give your area wildlife manager a call and we can figure out if it's worth intervening. We do work with, there's only one rehab place in the entire state, Wild and Free in Garrison, that does bears, and they do take orphan cubs as well. But in general, just let them do their business and they'll be fine. If it's 50 pounds, so this is the size of like a small Labrador, certainly that thing's going to make it through the winter just fine. And the best thing you can do is let them munch. So that would be my recommendation.
So we had another one of our members posted recently, and I just thought I'd run this by you. She'd put a video up and she said she was laying on the couch in her house and she's got one of those, must be a Ring, you know, that takes the video. She said a bear came to her front door. Said, I'm feeling a little bit terrified. I scared him off, hoping that doesn't come back tonight. That's very aggressive. It's an adolescent bear. Advice welcome. I have some firecrackers ready.
All right. So firecrackers are not generally needed, especially given how dry conditions are around the forest right now. Probably if it's a pretty young bear, it's just curious. It may have gotten a food reward from a person in the past or near a house, and so it's just curious. Generally, these things move along if they don't get that food reward. But if they're a little persistent, and you don't want to use firecrackers, which I generally wouldn't recommend because you don't want to hurt the animal or start the woods on fire, boat horns, those air horns, work really well. You can go out on your porch and bang pots and pans. Sometimes it's less effective if you're in your house just making a lot of noise because it's just like a house making noise. But once they view, oh, there's a human, you know, making a lot of noise, it's time to flee. That's good behavior. And the fact that it moved on is a good sign that it's not, you know, doomed to raid people's houses or bust in or anything like that. It's mostly curiosity. Similarly, when people are out and about and they, you know, they'll see a bear rear up on its back legs, you know, it's not an aggressive posture. They just are trying to smell and see you and figure out if you're a threat to them. And so, you know, black bears are not inherently dangerous, but they are large critters and we want to give them respect and give them their space and a wide berth when we see them.
Always good advice. Yeah, they don't have a history of attacking, but as Bill Bryson noted in his book, you know, it only has to happen once.
Agreed. Yep.
Andy, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Boy, we are remiss. We could have you on monthly and talk about bears. I think everybody, I know I am, very curious about them, and I think everybody else is too. It's just, they're fascinating creatures.
They sure are. I don't have any reservations in saying this, but I think I probably have one of the best jobs in the state. Mm. So I get to talk about bears, work on bears, study bears. It's my whole career, and I am so thankful to have the job and happy to share the knowledge with anyone. Thanks, folks, for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
We've been talking to Andy Tri from the Minnesota DNR. He's the bear guy there, and he's one of the many people that come on the air with us and help us understand our natural world, including John Latimer, including the students that we brought to you this morning. So we thank you. You are making that possible with your membership to KAXE. It's not just to, you know, it keeps voices, it keeps this kind of lively conversation going. That means something. That connects us all to each other. I have never seen a bear around our place.
Oh, really?
And I would love to. Yeah. Hmm. Maybe it's probably out in the woods, and I'm not there at the time it would be running around.
Yeah,
there's
maybe
a ton of blackberries out there, so it's probably...
Oh, they're definitely... Yeah, they're okay. There.
All right.
They just aren't coming to your door, which may be a good thing.
Yeah.
Support for KAXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org. Support for KAXE comes from Lady Sippers, N.A. Bottle Shop, located in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only N.A. bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options.